God and God alone. That is repeated twice, God and God alone, because really we don't generally believe that this reality that we experience is actually a divine phenomenon or a divine means infinite, eternal. Somehow that there's anything infinite and eternal here in any spiritual sense is very difficult for us to understand, appreciate, and believe. In a physical sense, it's quite clear. Yes, there's no boundary to space. Scientists have looked for the edge of the universe, and is there a place or is there a region in which the number of galaxies that fill the universe becomes ever more sparse and eventually ends? And no one has found any conclusive evidence of that. No matter how far they look, they take telescopes out into outer space where the atmosphere of the Earth doesn't distort the view, and they think, well, maybe we can find an edge to this universe. We can find something beyond which, some region beyond which there doesn't appear to be anything. But there's no, one cannot, I mean, no one can say that such a proposition actually is true. No evidence for this has been found, which itself should be a very significant fact. That what we're looking at, whatever we're looking at, is not a finite thing. That is a very profound idea that is not accepted, because we're concerned totally with the finite, with that which has boundaries. Everything we look at, there's a region within which it exists, and beyond that, there's a region in which it does not exist. There's always a boundary to everything, and then beyond that, we don't know. So far, the only thing that's been boundless is space itself, time itself. So everything finite seems to take place, seems to occur in something which is infinite, or appears to be infinite. Can you prove it? No, not entirely. You can speculate on it. You can look as far as you can. No, we don't see any edge to anything. But that it should be absolutely so, we cannot ever prove. And that's a very profound idea, that actually, normally people think the idea of God is something, well, it just doesn't seem right. What is there? What is the proof that an infinite reality exists as described, as attributed to what is generally called by the name of God or Ishvara or any other name? But I think we should be surprised at the other thing. If there were a limit to the universe, we should be very surprised, because it's actually inconceivable. If you have a limit to anything, there must be something beyond that limit, or else it's a stone wall into which you go. But that stone wall itself implies there's something beyond. All of our experience, every one of our experiences that we may have in any field whatsoever, Everything implies that an infinite, whatever we do in a finite way, whatever we observe in a finite way, is embedded in an infinite matrix. And so then it would be very surprising if it physically this is so, intellectually this is so, emotionally this is so, but spiritually it is not so. There is no God, there is nothing like that whatsoever. That would be very surprising. The surprising thing is not, or the difficult thing is not to believe that there is a divine reality, a divine providence. The difficult thing is to accept the fact that there is not such a thing. Because everything else, all of our experience, is a finiteness embedded in an infinite context. So when the Upanishads declare these fundamental truths, it should be self-evident. Of course, in the we know the expression, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all, of course they say all men, they mean all persons are created equal. That's part of our national heritage. We hold it to be self-evident. See, even the founders of this country admitted the fact that there are certain things which must be self-evident by the very nature of our existence. They didn't give any reason why we should think that all people are created equal. Why should it not be that some people are created in a certain way and other people are created in another way? No, they said it is self-evident. And just exactly the same way, it is self-evident that God exists. That is the thesis that we're trying to discuss here. It should be, the burden of proof should be on those who say that God does not exist. Because what is God, or the spiritual reality generally conceived of? It is conceived as being infinite, eternal, all peace, all sweetness, all compassion. These are the attributes that we give to God. And it is self-evident. We figure this is self-evident that it should be so. So there is something within us that recognizes that every finite activity is embedded in an infinite context. That's not something that has to be proved. It's something that is really self-evident. Now, all of our actions, all of our thoughts indicate that. All of our feelings, I mean, intellectually we say no. We may say no, it's not self-evident. It has to be proved. I don't accept that there is a God, that there's an infinite providence. There's anything of that nature whatsoever. I don't accept it. But actually, we do accept it. All of our actions are taken really with that assumption. Now, if we look at the Upanishads, which are the foundations of Vedanta philosophy, and being the most ancient of the living religions, or probably the most ancient, it's not, that isn't absolutely proved either. The beginning of Judaism also, we do not know. Anyway, both of these ancient streams of thought, they all accepted the fact that there is an infinite context in which all finiteness is embedded. And the one of the oldest of the Upanishads puts it in this way, sarvam khaluridam brahma. All of this sarvam khalu indeed, idam, all of this is Brahman. And then the question is, all right, you've given it a name, but what is Brahman? So it goes on to explain, Tadjalan. Tadjalan is the explanation they give for Brahman. So you say, well, what does that mean? It's construed to the Tadjalan. That means that is what? It is Jalan. What is Jalan? Of course, there you have to go to Sanskrit roots and Sanskrit grammar. Ja refers to Jan, the root for to be born. La is emblematic of the root for destruction. And An is Atman. An actually is the root to breathe or to live. So everything from which, what is Brahman? That from which is the Ja, La, and An. That from which is the birth, the destruction, and breathing means the continuation of the universe. That from which the universe originates, that into which it eventually dissolves, and that which by which it is sustained. In other words, everything, it is the foundation of everything. That is how Brahman is defined. And that whatever we have, whatever we experience, whatever we see, whatever we conjecture, the whole of experience, sarvam, all of that is indeed that reality. That is the statement that is made. And of course, there are other statements that are similar to that, the Mahavakyas. I am Atma Brahma, the self is Brahman, Pragyanam Brahman, knowledge, that consciousness, knowledge is Brahman, Tattvamasi, you are that. All these statements refer to that, but then the question is, how do we understand that? How do we substantiate that? You can make all these statements, you are that, but is it just a statement, or is there any reality behind it? Is there any way of, is there any way for us to actually verify that? And then, of course, you say yes, the traditional teachers will say yes, you go through this type of spiritual practice, and then that will slowly come, you will realize it, and then you will understand that this is true. And since over the millennia, so many people have vouched, yes, it is true, I've experienced it, okay, so we have some justification for accepting it, but until we ourselves realize it, that justification also is provisional. So the question is, how can we experience that? I mean, these are all the statements made in the scriptures, and they are our guides for what exists, but how do we verify that? Now, the claim that is made, you see, these are all hints. These Mahavakyas, these great statements, are all hints for our spiritual practice. I mean, we can repeat them, and somehow we expect that repetition itself will generate that experience in us, okay, that may be so, but we can't simply, at least we feel impatient. We don't want to wait for that. We could, in principle, yes, it will happen. We will realize that we will follow all these instructions and we will realize Brahman. So we continue following the instructions, but we also want a little bit something more. We want a little taste of something. There has to be some justification there. There has to be some feeling that this is true. I mean, granted, the full justification may take a long time, and you've got to do this and that, and if you believe in rebirth, you have to be reborn a number of times in order to slowly mature into that realization. That is all right, but not totally satisfying. What we want is actually get some indication that this is so, this is true. And there are certain practices which lead us to it, certain meditation practices which lead us to it. But even before, I mean, those again may take untold lengths of time to bear fruit. So what is it? Can we actually get some idea, even right now, sitting here as imperfectly perfected as we are, is there something that we can experience right now that will give us some clue that this is really so? There should be some indication left somewhere. The example is, going back to science, supposition was, by doing various calculations about how fast galaxies move apart from each other and all that, they figured at a certain time there was something called a Big Bang, a big explosion in which this universe was created. Of course, the question always is, what was there before that? But that aside, some brilliant person said, okay, this is your theory. 14 billion years ago, this universe was created. Now, how do we know that this is so? So some brilliant person said, look, if it was created in some huge temperature fireball, there ought to be something left around of that. And they speculated that there would be an isotropic microwave background. I mean, fairly low frequency, microwave frequency, radiation all over the universe from no particular direction. Because where was the Big Bang? Where was the center of the universe? Everywhere. It started from something that was in some conceptual way a center, but now it is everywhere. And they looked for it. And for heaven's sakes, they found it. They found an isotropic microwave background coming from no particular place in the universe, isotropic, but corresponding to a temperature which, as the original Big Bang expanded, it would cool, corresponding to a temperature of some 3 degrees Kelvin, which is like 270 degrees below zero or something. Anyway, they found something. There was something here that could be 100% certainty, no, but something that could definitely be attributed to this mysterious thing called the Big Bang. Okay, now if that is the case, why shouldn't we be able to feel God's presence also? If God is the essence of all experience, if God or Brahman or that ultimate reality is the source of everything, is the essence of everything, there should be something that's still left around from that. It will be totally unexpected that it could be so very hidden that there's no way that either you get the whole experience or you get nothing. There must be something somewhere. So in that same sense, we approach spiritual life. Right now, I should be able to feel the existence of God right now, right here, at this point, in this auditorium, at this moment. I should be able to feel that. And actually, one of the reasons that I don't seem to be able to feel it is because I tell myself, no, I'm not feeling anything. So naturally, if you're convinced you're not feeling anything, any of that, you won't see it. But that is the idea of meditation, that we should, when we go for meditation every day, we're supposed to do that. We should feel the presence of that reality. Now, what is that reality? So we have certain instructions. We, as an imagination, we imagine that. In the Upanishads also mentioned that. You imagine, or actually they say there is, in the region of the heart, there is a region, there is an area of light. Guha, they call it a cave. There's in the cave of the heart, there is there is such a thing. You visualize that, the cave, the region of the heart, and within that you place a light, and within that light you place a sacred object. And then you concentrate on that. You try to feel the presence of that. And the claim is made that you can feel the presence of something. What that is depends on what you're concentrating on. But the point is that even right now, we can't make an attempt and actually feel that there is a reality within us. There is something within us which is beyond our physical and intellectual self. There's a spiritual reality within us. We can feel that presence. And all the methods of meditation, there are many methods in Vedanta, in Buddhism, and in Christianity to some extent, there are methods of meditation. There are ways of repeating the name of one of the names of God. But accompanying with that, there should be a feeling that there is a presence within us. We should be able to feel the reality of that. We should be able to feel that there is something there. Not just that I'm repeating a name or some formula, some prayer. Those things are very good. But, I mean, in addition to all of that, whatever we normally do, which is excellent, but in addition to that, we have to feel that there is a reality within us. And also, we should feel that that reality is actually present all around. It's not just when I... If the reality is present only when I close my eyes, then that's very difficult to explain what kind of reality that would be. It's only present in my thought. It's not present actually around me. That doesn't make any sense. I should feel the presence of God in everyone and everywhere. So they talk about the region of the heart, that is true, but one should be able to feel that there is, not only when I meditate, also when I'm walking around, whatever I experience, I should be able to feel that there is something profound here in addition to, on the surface, it may be something that I like, something I dislike, something I'm happy with, something I'm terribly angry at. That's all on the surface. The ocean is sometimes very calm, sometimes extremely rough, sometimes hugely rough, but it's just the surface. Underneath it all, if you use the ocean as an example, underneath it all there is a huge space of eternal calmness and beauty and reality. So underneath the surface of what I'm looking at, I should try to feel the presence of that reality, or some reality, or something. I'm looking, you know. We are looking. We don't know exactly what to call it, but it should be something that is Satchit-Ananda. We know what it should be, because we've been told in the scriptures what it should be. It should be Satchit-Ananda. It should be an existence, Sat. And it should be a conscious reality, a reality that responds to us, Chit. And it should fill us with calmness, with joy, with a feeling of purity and holiness, Ananda. So we know, you know, when we look inside, if it doesn't have those characteristics, we're looking in the wrong place or doing it in the wrong way. So we know what we're looking for. We know the characteristics of what we're looking for. But every one of us should be able to experience something. If one of us has ever experienced it, and these sages in the scriptures of the various religions claim that they have experienced it, if one of us has ever experienced it, all of us can experience it. We are all made in the same mold. And the maker of the mold didn't break it and create a new mold that left out some things. So we should all, if anyone has ever experienced God, I should be able to experience something of that, at least the tiniest taste that I should be able to get right now. And I will not accept any excuses. This is this is absolutely has to be the case. So that, of course, means that if we don't experience any even tiny suspicion of that divine reality, we have only ourselves to blame. And that is true in a sense. But of course, in another sense, it is not true. We're also subject to a long history of the opposite. We are the result of karma, which is good and productive and tending toward holiness, and all these other things which are muddying the water and churning up the ocean. So we have to calm that sea. We have to deal with these internal psychological problems, with all these factors that we were born with, the factors that we accumulated in this life. All that we have to deal with and produce that inner state of calm in which we can try to feel that reality, and in which we can begin to have the peace of mind to concentrate on that. Now, there is one very striking incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, which in a way is impossible to explain. In another way, we can give explanations, but really, it is a difficult phenomenon. Sri Ramakrishna, when he was he had accepted this teacher, Tota Puri, this classical Indian monk, traditional monk, as his teacher in the Advaita system. The teacher asked him to concentrate his mind and remove all other ideas and concentrate on this reality which we are talking about now. Just make his mind, just remove all other things and let that reality alone manifest. So all duality, all multiplicity was to be controlled, and only so that that reality, which is the background of everything, would be totally perceived. But Sri Ramakrishna could not remove one thing. All other things he could control. But the image of that divine reality, the divine mother that he had been worshipping, he could not remove that image. So although he felt totally absorbed in her presence and all these divine experiences, Tota Puri was trying to get him to another level in which that totality alone exists, or you couldn't even say exists, where that non-dual level, that means the level where duality does not appear at all, and only that Satchidananda, or you can't even say that, that appears. So, but then Tota Puri, his teacher, he put a piece of glass between on his forehead and pierced his forehead. There was a painful sensation, and he said, concentrate on that painful sensation. So anyway, the details of that, that was between them. Who knows why he said that. But the point was, when the image of that Supreme Divine Reality came, Sri Ramakrishna, imagining a sword, cut that image in two. And when he did that, that ultimate reality, that was the only thing that was keeping him from experiencing a full experience of that reality. That experience came to him. Now, the significance of that, of course, you know, you can talk about it in many different ways. But one thing that it seems to indicate is that even right now, see, when all these images appear, this whole universe is like that image of the Divine Mother. Of course, for Sri Ramakrishna, it was very purified, and it was very 100%. What we are experiencing is, you know, a very muddled version of this experience. But the thing is, beyond this experience, behind this experience, interpenetrating this experience, there is that divine reality interpenetrating every experience, even the most holy, even the experience of the Divine Mother. Interpenetrating that is something which we can experience right now. That is the claim. That it isn't that there is something that is so difficult that it'll take you years and lifetimes to experience. That's true. I mean, it may take years and lifetimes, but we shouldn't go with that idea. We should go with the idea that we're going to experience it right now. If we don't go with that idea, we will probably experience very little. But if we go with the idea that that supreme reality, that ultimate, that full, you could say all the bells and whistles, that everything, the totality, is here right now, is experienceable right now, We may only be able to experience the uttermost shadow of the shadow of the shadow of it, but even that is so wonderful, it's absolutely totally worthwhile. Not only that, but it gives us an idea that really we are on the right path. Now, these things have been stated so well in some of the scriptures. I'm going to read some of this. Of course, this original statement from the Chandogya Upanishad, that Sarvam Kalidam Brahma, that is one of the, and then followed by this Tadjalan, that all of this that has been born has been is being maintained and it will eventually disappear. All of that is really included in this reality of Brahman. But there are other scriptures. The Gita has so many excellent examples of that. For instance, one of the consequences of that, samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram. So, samam, in every way, samam, equal, in an equal fashion, sarveshu bhuteshu, in every being, tishtantam, standing or abiding, parameshwaram, the supreme reality, the supreme God. One, that is what one should see. He who, I'll read the whole translation, that it's another line too. He who sees the Supreme Lord as existing equally in all beings and as the imperishable among the perishable, he is who he, with that reality, he sees that. He sees the Supreme Lord as existing equally in all beings and as the imperishable among the perishable. That we should be able to practice. That is one of the important practices. Samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram. To see that Parameshwara, that Supreme Ishvara, Supreme Lord, to see it in the same way in all beings. That is what we should see. Wherever, whenever we meet someone, or if we're not meeting anyone, when we're sitting and simply thinking, we should see within ourselves. We should feel the presence of that reality within ourselves. We should feel the presence of it in every experience. You know, you say, well, I don't know. It doesn't seem reasonable. All I see is people and human beings, and I infer that they have minds, but I don't see any divine reality in them. The reason we don't see a divine reality in what we're looking at is because we're not trying. I mean, these scriptures are things that were written thousands of years ago. They've been followed and examined and expounded and explained many, many times. Again and again, they've been verified by people in all walks of life. The busiest people were, in those ancient days, were kings. Kings on thrones governing thousands and thousands of people, they were the ones who actually acquired this knowledge preeminently. And they could, even in their busiest times, they could acquire this knowledge. How is it that we cannot? if we have a little corner in our house, or even in Sri Ramakrishna had this idea that you can meditate in the forest, you can meditate in a corner of your house, or you can meditate in your own mind. The idea is, in addition to the meditation that you normally do, to feel the reality of that. Otherwise, it just becomes a formula and it doesn't go very far. But to feel that this is an embodiment of truth, an embodiment of experience, that is what we have to do. And again, the next verse in the Gita, samam pasyan hi sarvatra. Samam, in the same way, pasyan, seeing, sarvatra, everywhere. Samavastitam Ishwaram, the Ishwara that is samavastita. Stita means standing or abiding in. Samavastita, totally embodied. So, I mean, you couldn't possibly make it any clearer, and if we don't understand it, that means we don't want to understand it. Samam pasyan, seeing in the same way, sarvatra, everywhere. Samavastitam, totally equally standing or abiding in the same way, Ishvara, that Lord. How much more emphatic can it be? Nahinaschatmanatmanam tato yati param gatim. Tato, from this yati he goes, param to the supreme gatim, to the supreme goal. So he does not, nahinaschatmanatmanam, he does not destroy the self by the self. In other words, if we're looking at people as people, we're denying the existence of God, really. The only way to affirm the existence of God is to see God everywhere. I mean, there is one aspect of God that all God means a supreme reality, whatever, however different religions think of it. But the one thing they all agree upon is that that reality is everywhere. So if you're looking at people, if you see your friend and you're greeting your friend as your friend, and maybe you're a little prejudiced against that person, oh, this person did this and that, and I'm not sure, I don't like it, I'm not going to be as friendly with them as I used to be. All these considerations are there between people. But we're not talking about people. We look at others as people, and that is the first mistake. On the surface, they are wearing that costume. But inside, one should be able to see, looking through those eyes, one should be able to see the reality, that it is God alone that is standing in front of us. Whenever we are doing anything, I mean, even if we are putting up something and putting nails into walls or whatever, that is the presence of that divine principle, that divine reality, that consciousness, whatever you want to call it, that is fully present in every movement. Pratibodha viditam in the Kena Upanishad, in every perception, in every knowledge, we should see God. So the next time we feel that we're not making any progress, oh, this is all very good for people who are, you know, engaged in spiritual life. This is people for monks and nuns, this is fine. But us, we're in the world, we have to fight our way to all these things. We have to, so many things we have to do. We have no time for all of this. Well, that's all right, but if we don't have time for all of this, that means we will never have time for all of this. This is true. Everything is, all reality is present before us every moment. That is the basic statement of Vedanta. There's nothing that we have to postpone for a later time. No, I'm not ready for this. No, I'm not qualified for this. How do you know what you're qualified for unless you try it? No, this is a profound idea. The reason we're not realizing God in many respects is because we're really not serious enough about it. And some taste will be there, some indication will be there. If one, you can even do it in a very practical, mundane way. There's a problem. You've tried everything to solve that problem. You cannot solve it. Something is always blocking you. One can apply to God for everything. One can apply to God for help in that. Sri Ramakrishna was, a family was visiting him, Balaram Bose, one of his very close householder disciples, and his family had come to visit him at Dakshineswar. So he saw them off on a boat. They went back by boat. It's maybe 5 or 8 miles to Calcutta. And they went on the Ganga. But the Ganga at that point is half a mile wide at least. And when wind blows and all that, huge waves can come. And the boats can get, sunk because of that. So Sri Ramakrishna, he said goodbye to Balaram and his family, and they went off down the river. And as they were going down, storm clouds came on, and, the wind came up, and Sri Ramakrishna prayed to the Divine Mother, "Mother, don't blacken my face. I mean, if Balaram and his family perished, they would say, oh, they went to that luckless holy man in Dakshineswar, and now look what happened to them." The point is that there is nothing, there's no instant in our, there's no, instance in our life where we cannot appeal to God for help. No, I won't do that. No, I can solve my problem. I'll go do this and that. I don't have to bother God about this. That is one theory. There's a story about that too. Three people were walking in a forest, and suddenly they heard a tiger roar. So one of them said, "Oh, let us sit here and pray to God. Let us." We're in great trouble. And the other one said, "Oh, yes, brother, let us do that." The third one said, "Well, there's a tree here. Why don't we just climb this tree and see if that we can avoid problems this way?" So that is one attitude. Why bother God for all of this? I can do my own thing. The point is, doing your own thing is in exactly the same category as meditation, prayer, and all these things. So what, there is nothing that cannot, every action is an action intended for the realization of God. And if we look at every action that way, like if there is a serious problem, okay, it's not a boat going down the Ganga that's about to be tossed around by a windstorm. But whatever is inside us, we want to see is, can I get God involved in all of this? Why not try it and see what happens? Nothing happens, okay. Nothing happens, nothing lost. But if something happens, if you feel that there's a little bit of a response, the whole point is we want to get a response to prayer. We don't mind praying because that's standard operating practice. And people pray, yes, parents have told us, teachers have suggested it, this and that, we pray. But really speaking, we don't really expect to get an answer to the prayer. And many times, even if the answer comes, we're not aware of it. But the thing is, if we do get an answer, then we say, okay, well, that's okay, it worked this time. I don't know, maybe it was just coincidental. Then we try it again. And maybe it works in a different way or something, some different reaction comes. But as we try more and more, the point is, whichever way you contact God, there's an advantage that comes from it. You may not get what you're asking for. Every child asks for candy, but usually the mother doesn't give it. Now it's bad for you. You can have one piece. That's all. You're not going to get any more today, no matter how much you cry. Okay, that sort of thing definitely happens also. The point is somehow to put God into our life. Not just, I'm going to be working here and I've got too many other things to do. When I get back home, I'll sit down and I'll meditate and it'll be wonderful. Every moment, if God is not in every moment, then why should we complain that we don't experience anything? The more we put that spiritual essence, that spiritual reality into everything, we make the statement that Brahman is everything, everywhere, all the time, under all conditions, God alone exists. We say all these statements. If we actually try to live that way, whatever the problem is, we consult that inner guide. Or in any way, whatever you want to do, the point is to bring the spiritual reality into it. That spiritual reality, Brahman, Atman, whatever you want to call it, is supposed to be present everywhere all the time. Then why don't we make use of it everywhere all the time? That is a very... And if we do make use of it more and more, bring that idea, whatever your idea is. You may not believe in prayer or anything, that's all right. The point is bringing that spiritual conception into every moment of life as intensely as we can. That is the thing that we need to do. How we do it, the details of it will vary with everyone. But to bring that into every moment, and then we have a right to say, oh, I've done it and nothing happens. But those people who have done it in a very devoted, dedicated way, they do find that there is a connection. There is a reality. There is right now, Brahman is present right now. God is present right this very moment. Everywhere, under all circumstances, for everyone. If we get a little bit of a taste for that, then the whole of life will assume a much, much richer and deeper significance.